The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is Dan Gingis, author of Winning at Social Customer Care, How Top Brands Create Engaging Experiences on Social Media. And you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, which is named by LinkedIn as one of 10 podcasts that will make you a better marketer. My goal for this podcast is to help you discover new ideas about what's actually working in the quickly changing field of modern marketing and sales. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since you're a listener to the Marketing Book Podcast, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or some other helpful resource that I know of for whatever situation you find yourself in, just connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat and I'll try to point you in the right direction. Also, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Blinkist. Blinkist is an app that takes the key insights from the best nonfiction books and distills them into a format that you can read or listen to in just a few minutes on your smartphone. Several of the books featured on the Marketing Book Podcast are on Blinkist. You can sign up for free at Blinkist.com/marketingbookpodcast. Blinkist is spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, and if you opt for the paid version, you'll get an additional 20% off, but only if you go to Blinkist.com/marketingbookpodcast. I also have a link to it at marketingbookpodcast.com. I'll have more on Blinkist in a few minutes. And now, on with the show. Today, we welcome Dan Gingis to the Marketing Book Podcast to talk about his book, Winning at Social Customer Care, How Top Brands Create Engaging Experiences on Social Media. Dan Gingis has worked in social media, customer service, marketing, and digital customer experience throughout a 20-plus year career. He has led social customer care programs at several Fortune 500 companies, and interesting fact, he hosts the Experience This podcast with a recent guest on the Marketing Book Podcast, Joey Coleman. Dan, congratulations on winning at Social Customer Care, and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Well, thank you so much. I'm super psyched to be here, and I'm glad that you've had both me and Joey on recently. That is a true honor.
Well, and it's an honor for me, and it's going to be great for the listener. And if you guys ever add a third person to your show, by law, I will be required to immediately.
As long as they write a book, right?
Right. Yes, that's true. Thank you. So, Dan, I noticed you have an MBA from Northwestern University in Chicago. And I was wondering if Philip Kotler, the father of modern marketing, was ever one of your professors while you were there.
Unfortunately, I did not get to take any of Professor Kotler's classes, but certainly learned his teachings because many of his teachings were included in the marketing classes I did take. But interesting thing about Kellogg was that I had been a marketer for little more than 4 years before I went to business school and had never taken a single marketing class in undergrad. I was a psychology and communications double major, which, as it turns out, is actually a really good combination for marketing. I just didn't know it at the time. Mm-hmm. And so at Kellogg is when I really learned that everything I had been doing for 4 years had a name and a framework and, you know, the four C's and the P's and all that sort of stuff. I had no idea. So Kellogg was great for me, but unfortunately, I was never with in Kotler's class.
Well, and I've actually interviewed another author who has an MBA from Northwestern, Dave Munn, and he had not taken any of Dr. Kotler's classes. But one of the greatest honors of doing this podcast is being able to interview him not once but twice.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was very exciting. He was the 100th guest. About his book, Marketing 4.0. And then he enjoyed it so much that I was able to interview him about his autobiography, which was
very cool.
Really, really fascinating. So let's get into the book. Dan Gingis, why did you write this book?
Well, I had been a marketer for a long time. And when I was thrust into a social media role at Discover, which is a U.S. credit card company, I first signed up for Twitter to learn what I was getting myself into. And the first thing that I realized about social media generally was that it was the first and really still only marketing channel where people could talk back. And I thought that was absolutely fascinating. I mean, brands for so many years have been used to television and direct mail and email where they get to shout their message. And we as consumers have no choice but to sit and listen.
That was called the good old days.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And all of a sudden, marketers descended on social media. And you know what? Consumers had something to say about that. And they started talking back. And some of that talking back was good, because there are a lot of people that want to have a relationship with companies today. And so a lot of the talking back was compliments, you know, I love your brand, whatever. A lot of it was questions and people having trouble with a product or service, or just being interested in some historical fact about the company, whatever it was. And then obviously there were a lot of complaints. And I think that's the part that took companies by surprise, was that, hey, I'm putting out this marketing message that talks about all the great things about us, and people are responding with negativity. And that just was unexpected. So that immediately fascinated me about this channel. And a short while later, I paired up with a buddy of mine, Dan Moriarty, who at the time was the head of social media for Hyatt Hotels. He's now the head of digital for the Chicago Bulls. And he and I shared an interest about this social, what we called social customer care, and this concept of customers being able to talk with brands. So we started interviewing brands on a podcast that's no longer with us, unfortunately, but still available wherever you listen to podcasts, called Focus on Customer Service. And over about 51 episodes, we interviewed just some amazing brands, large brands that everybody's heard of, small brands that nobody's heard of, and everywhere in between. And as I was talking with these brands, a couple of things came into focus about what was consistent among them that they were doing really well in social media. And that was really the basis of the book, was the what I call the building blocks, or the eight steps to winning at social customer care, were all things that I learned from the companies that we interviewed, and then the three companies where I sort of served in a similar role as well.
Interesting. Well, let me just quote from one paragraph from the introduction. These days, customer service, both good and bad, is played out in the open on social media. While there are countless examples of unfortunate gaffes and public relations nightmares on social, that's not what this book is about. This book is about treating your customers right every time, exceeding customer experience expectations, and delivering memorable customer service in what I like to call the world's most public customer service channel. So, Dan, explain what you mean when you say this is not a book that is important. It's a book that is existentially important.
Well, I think that there are enough people out there that are hammering on the brands that are getting it wrong. And this has really been a theme for me in both podcasts that I've hosted and in the book, which is I'm going to leave the negativity to other people. Occasionally, Joey and I will highlight a brand gaffe and explain kind of what we would have done differently. And generally, we won't even name the brand, because at that point, I don't think it matters. It's really about the learning that you take away from it. But I really wanted to write a book about how to do it well. And that was really important to me, to kind of keep the positivity. There is so much negativity out in social media, but when brands are intentional about it, what I found is that you can create enough positive experiences to do, and this is not in the book, but it's sort of a new phrase that I like, is to make the lovers louder than the haters. And that is absolutely possible. And lots of brands have done that simply by providing a great experience and also being very responsive and engaging to people on social media when they're seeking that engagement.
You know, I just love it when I see an example of something exceptional that a company has done on social media and customer care. And it's just, it makes you feel good. And maybe because, you know, you want to avoid the negativity. Now, on this podcast, I have interviewed, gosh, at least 10 authors who've written books about customer experience and engineering the great customer experience that they should have. You say, and you're very clear, this is not a customer experience book. So for the purpose of our discussion, what is the Dan Gingis definition of customer experience?
Well, I say it's not a customer experience book because it's really a subset of customer experience.
Right.
So my definition is that customer experience is how customers feel about every single interaction they have with a brand. And the two things that I highlight there are the word feel, because it really is about what the customer is thinking and feeling. The example I always give is that if you think you have a really easy to use mobile app and your IT department and your programmers and your designers tell you that it's a really easy to use mobile app, but your customer tells you it's difficult to use, then the answer is it's difficult to use, right? Because perception is reality. It doesn't matter what you think about it. It matters what they do. But then the second part is it's every single interaction, and that interaction can occur across multiple channels or multiple times in the same channel. And so when we talk about social customer care, I posit that that's a really important part of the customer experience, because generally you have a customer that wants to engage with a brand, is seeking an answer or is seeking the resolution to a problem. And what I find time and time again is if a company does a good job of responding and resolving that problem, they can often turn a negative experience into a positive one. And that's where the gold mine is. And I give lots of examples in the book, including some that I experienced, you know, in the companies I was working for, where you start with somebody that is really negative, and we'll call them a hater, as Jay Baer might. And then you turn them around into a customer advocate just because, frankly, they didn't expect you to respond and resolve their problem.
Yeah. Now, I think you mentioned that, was it only 40% of complaints on social media are even responded to?
Yeah. And that number is, I think, inching up, but not very quickly.
Okay, and 41.
Yeah, it is very, very surprising to me. And the thing that still surprises me as well is that I think that number is even lower for compliments. And one of the things that I often advocate is that if you have somebody in social media who is saying nice things about your brand and sharing it with their friends and their followers and the world, and you ignore that person, you're missing a gigantic opportunity. I mean, they are basically giving you a gift and you're not even willing to say thank you. So I think that number, what happens is that companies tend to prioritize the complaints and the negative, and then they run out of resources, and so they don't even bother with the positives. And so while that number is very low for the negatives, because we should be responding to everyone, I do think that there's huge opportunity in talking to people who are praising your brand.
What can be gained from responding to the compliments, and why is it so important to respond to those? That was a big point in your book, as I recall.
Yeah, I think it's because, you know, what has changed with social media, as I alluded to before, is that consumers now want to have a relationship with brands. This didn't used to happen. And again, it didn't used to happen because of, I believe, because of the marketing channels that were available, they were all one way. And so this desire to have a relationship, you can't have a relationship with yourself. There has to be somebody on the other end of the relationship. And so when I go on to social media and I call out a brand and say, boy, I had a really great experience and I just love this brand, and then I hear crickets, I'm not necessarily as a consumer feeling love back. Right. And so now my desire to have a relationship with this brand may have shifted. And so to me, it's really important because these people are giving your brand a gift. After all, there are entire books written about how to create word of mouth marketing. And, you know, and all of our goals in brands are to, you know, get as many people saying nice things about our brand as we can. And then when they do that and we just let it sit out there, it's very surprising to me. And I think the reason for that is that that almost never happened in other customer service channels. I mean, you could talk to 1,000 call center agents and ask them, have you ever picked up the phone and somebody on the other hand and said, I just called to tell you how great you are. Right. I mean, this never happened. And so nobody ever had a playbook for that. And then all of a sudden, again, in this new channel, the world's most public customer service channel, you do have a lot of people that are praising brands when they have a great experience. And unfortunately, again, one of the reasons why they do that is because remarkable experiences are still so rare. And so when we have really, really good experiences, we're actually just as willing to share those out in public as we are when we have really bad experiences.
Right. It's funny how people get excited. Like my wife has been looking at buying some property, and she said she got excited because one of the realtors that she left a message for online, like, I'm interested in this property, they actually called her back. Sometimes the bar is so low. I said, yeah, 80% of success is showing up, according to Woody Allen. And that's just one good example of it. But for the doubting Thomases, let's say there's a CEO sitting there listening to this. Maybe he's sitting in traffic with his arms crossed thinking, I don't know. We deal with the people that are complaining. I wanted to mention that you, in the book, you said that research by the company named Walker, by 2020, customer experience will be more important than price in most business-to-business buying decisions. And there's also a study you mentioned from Forrester's Customer Experience Index, where they analyzed five pairs of publicly traded companies, where one company in each of the pairs had a significantly higher score in their experience index. And they calculated the compound annual growth rate of each company and found out that the ones with superior customer experience outperformed the laggards significantly.
Yeah, I mean, this is happening now. It isn't even 2020 yet. And I think that one of the reasons why Joey Coleman and I got together for our podcast is we're both believers that customer experience is the last true differentiator for brands. And I think the best example of that comes from my time in the credit card industry, where I saw over 10 years that credit cards were first competing on price. So you saw APRs or interest rates come down and down and down and down until they were at zero. And you can't go any lower than zero. So the competition ended there. And then they started competing on rewards, and you had 1% back and 2% back and 5% back. At some point, those rewards programs got too expensive to be efficient and to work financially. And so the credit card companies looked around, and what Discover figured out really fast was the way to differentiate was to create the best experience. And when you do that, you not only draw more customers in, but they stay longer and they have less of a desire to look at your competition or to flee for any reason. And so I believe that in almost every industry, customer experience is going to be that last true differentiator, because when you compete on price, you tend to lose. Look at all the retailers that are going out of business because of the Amazon effect. And when you are when you compete on product, it's really difficult because products can be copied. Mm-hmm. But what can't be copied is the human element of your brand. And that includes customer service, but more generally is the experience that people have with your brand. That is really, really hard to copy. So if you make that exceptional, then your brand stands out and is more successful.
It reminds me of one very powerful sentence in the book where you said customer service is the new marketing.
For sure. I believe that customer service is the new marketing because it is the way that you convince people to join your brand, and it's the way that you convince them to stay. And again, with the world's most public customer service channel, what happens is that you're providing customer service not just for one person who's asking, but for everybody else that is viewing that engagement from the outside. And so there's no question that people more and more today are looking at companies, and when they see that they're really good at customer service and that they care about their customers, that is one of the factors that people consider in deciding to do business with a brand. it's also the best marketing when you have, again, somebody that has had a negative experience. One of my favorite examples from the book, and I tell this all the time, there was a Discover customer, or actually not a customer, he was a prospect, because he was getting a lot of mail from Discover asking him to sign up for a credit card. And he tweets at Discover, and he basically, he's a little bit snarky, and he basically says, you know, I went on vacation, I came back, there were five offers for the same card, you know, some sort of snarky comment about, you know, whether we were just uncoordinated or what have you. And the rep, I thought, did a fantastic job. She responded with a tiny bit of snark back, and she said, wow, we must really want you as a customer, which I thought was brilliant. Mm-hmm. And then she went immediately to, you know, DM us with your address and we'll take you off the list. And this guy tweets back immediately and says, wow, okay, I'll bite just because of your response. And he uses the hashtag great service. And when you look at the beginning to the end of this back and forth on Twitter, it was 13 minutes. And so in 13 minutes, Discover took somebody who took time out of his day to criticize the company and turned him into its newest customer. And there is a postscript to that story, is that I've been telling that story for years. And I mean, I've told it on stage and presentations and all this. And it occurred to me about 6 months ago that I never found out whether the guy actually got a Discover card. And I was like, man, I'm really curious. And so I tweeted this guy just from my own account. And I said, hey, you know, and I pointed to the tweet from, I think it was like 2014. And I said, did you ever get a card? And he wrote me back in about 3 minutes. And he said, I'm still a happy customer.
Ah.
And so I was like, whew, phew, because I've been telling that story for a while. But to me, that you were mentioning before, if you've got a C-level executive that doesn't believe this is worth it, that's the example I show them, is that you've taken somebody who is criticizing your brand and you've turned them into a customer. Name me another place that you can do that.
Mm. Yeah. You know, related to the C-suite, one of many things I learned in the book was that it might not be a good idea to give the social customer care duties over to the marketing department. You talk about how they really should be sitting with the customer service people.
Yeah, well, they have to work really closely together. And what happened when social media came onto the scene is it got put into marketing because brands immediately looked at it as another broadcast channel, and they got very excited because it was there were a lot of people on Facebook, and so it was, you know, mass media. So they put it into the marketing department, and then marketers got tripped up when they started getting customer service complaints because they didn't know the answers to those questions. They didn't know how to solve them. And so then they brought in the customer service people. And to me, the customer service people are critical because they're the ones that know how to deal with customers. And there's a whole chapter about sort of the skills that you should be looking for in a social customer service agent. And really, what is at the bottom of the list is knowledge of social media. Like, that's somewhat important. You have to kind of understand the differences between the channels. But ultimately, what you need is somebody who's really good at customer service, someone who has empathy, somebody who likes solving problems, somebody who's not going to get upset or take things personally when they're dealing with an angry customer.
And what you call a service aptitude.
A service aptitude. Yeah, I believe I borrowed that from John DeJulius, who is a customer service expert. And those are things that, frankly, marketers don't have. And I know that because I am a marketer and have been. So I think the companies that have done this really successfully have a seamless integration between marketing and customer service. And what that looks like is, if marketing is going to go out with a big paid spend on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or wherever it is, they tell the customer service people before they do that. Why? Because the more money we spend in social media, the more feedback we get from customers, because we're showing up in more people's feeds. So the customer service folks have to be ready. They have to be resourced with enough people to respond. Think about a brand that's doing a lot of marketing during the Super Bowl, right? And you've all of a sudden got, you know, tons of people coming in and talking to your brand more than usual. You've got to have the resources there to respond to that. But the other part is that the customer service people can feed back to the marketing people what customers are saying about that marketing piece about the product that's being offered, about the you know, discount or promotion or whatever it is, you're going to get feedback. And so that feedback is really important to the marketer, is to adjust accordingly for the next time they go out. So when you have that symbiotic relationship between the two groups, is really, that was one of the things that I noticed the successful companies were doing really, really well.
Mm-hmm. Also, it was interesting, you talk about the value of doing this in terms of customer ideas and product ideas. You're basically, the dialogue with your customers can be a good thing, particularly the ones that like you and want to help you. They're giving you ideas, and frankly, it seems like a lot of information that companies in the past, and probably still are, would pay a lot of money to get.
Absolutely. I mean, we have entire teams that are dedicated to consumer insights and research. And yet on these platforms, we have, I mean, unlimited data about what people are talking about in terms of our brands. And I did give a bunch of examples. Probably my favorite one is OtterBox, the phone case company, that just through social listening realized that there was a use case they hadn't actually considered when they were developing their products. And it frankly was a strange one to me. People were taking their phones into the shower because they wanted to listen to music in the shower.
No, I think they might have been listening to the Marketing Book podcast.
Well, that I can understand why people would do that in the shower as well.
I do have one listener that has said she does that. Missy Schmidt, we're talking about you. Please go ahead.
Well, good. Well, hopefully Missy has OtterBox's waterproof case on her phone. Right. Otherwise, she's not going to be listening for long.
Right.
And so OtterBox saw that this was a trend, and they ended up developing a waterproof case because of it, which became one of their best sellers. There was another brand that I thought was fascinating called Vega, which is based in Canada, and they're a nutritional supplement company, but they have a very, very tight niche. They are focused on vegan athletes. And so, you know, think marathon runners that are vegan. And so they create these powders, and not surprisingly, their customers don't have many other options on the market. But one of the things that they heard in social media was that people either loved the taste of their powders or completely despised the taste. There was nobody that was neutral about the taste of these powders. And they realized they had a problem. They had to do something about the people that didn't like the taste of the powders. And the answer was they created a whole series of recipes of smoothies that were made to intentionally cover up the taste of their own product. And this is fascinating to me because they've now got a whole army of customers who hate the taste of their product and are incredibly loyal to the company and are buying the product over and over again because they have a way to cover up the taste. I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
That's interesting. Yeah. So a couple other things. Why is it so important to respond to problems on social media rather than trying to get every question to go offline immediately? In other words, why do you need to demonstrate the responsiveness there? It seems like a lot of companies are saying the very first thing they're saying is, oh, please direct message us, or they're asking them to basically go off of social media.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to first respond to that with a rhetorical question of my own, which is, if you called a 1-800 number, a toll-free number, and the person answered the phone and said, hi, unfortunately, I can't speak with you. Would you mind emailing us instead? Or even better, could you just put your question into a letter and mail it in and we'll answer it that way? Like, that doesn't make any sense, right? Mm-hmm. And so when somebody comes at you on social media, to tell them to go to another channel doesn't make any sense.
And you know what? I've already tried the other channel.
Generally, that's one case, is that either social has become a channel of last resort, or especially in the, you know, with the millennial set, they know you have a toll-free number. They don't want to use the telephone. That's not a channel that they are interested in using, and social is a lot faster for them. So I don't like moving people off channel. Now, I've been in both healthcare and financial services, and there are, at least in the U.S., very strict privacy rules where you really can't do a whole lot of public answering. And that's why a lot of companies start sending people at least to direct message, which is okay with me because you're not really kicking them off the channel. But I like the idea of answering in public because there's two main reasons. The first is that if somebody has a question or a problem with your product or service, they are probably not the only one. So by you answering publicly, you are also in effect answering for other people, which down the road saves you the customer service expense of having to answer that question multiple times. And the second is that you're showing people that you care about your customers, that you engage, that you're listening. And I, as I said before, that is something that people look for these days in a company. And so I find that the companies that are willing to take on problems head on are looked at in a more favorable light. I guess I'd add one other thing, which is that, you know, complaints don't have to be your enemy. You don't have to be afraid of complaints. And it does still strike me that there are some brands that aren't even on Twitter or Facebook because they're afraid of hearing the negativity. But I find that people that are complaining about brands, and I'm not talking about the haters here that are just swearing at you or you know, being difficult for no reason. I'm talking about the people that have a genuine problem with your product or service. If you think about it, the easiest thing for them to do would be to simply walk away and go to your competitor. But instead, they've taken the time to actually complain to you, which says to me that they care and that they want you to solve the problem so that they can remain a customer. Now, your choice. Would you rather solve the problem and have them remain a customer? Or would you rather them go to your competitor? And to me, I'd rather try to solve the problem every time, or at least be honest and say, this is not a problem I can solve.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's... Or somewhat related to that, how best to deal with trolls? I mean, because there are the haters out there, and I'm not sure they really want their problem resolved.
No, and I wrote a blog about this on my website where I talked about the difference between hate and haters. And unfortunately, I had an experience where I was sitting in a call center and I was sitting next to a phone rep, and a person called in and just started spewing this hatred. And I couldn't believe that somebody took time out of their day to call a big company just to spew, you know, hate-filled messages. And it caused me to write this post because there is a very big difference between hate and haters. And I guess even in the haters world, you've got people that are trolls that are really just trying to cause a disturbance versus people that may be hating on your brand legitimately. And I think that's the key, is that you've got to identify the ones that have a legitimate problem and try to respond to them. But I think it's perfectly fine to block trolls and to not respond to them when they're just trying to, you know, get attention or, you know, if they're, I kind of have a straight up policy that if a post is filled with profanity, I think you can bypass that one. You know, if somebody's not willing to have a genuine conversation and respectful conversation, then you can ignore them. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the rule of twice that I think you referenced from Jay Baer?
Yeah, so Jay says that you can have two back and forths with a hater until it's okay to walk away from the conversation. And I think that's generally true, is that you know, if somebody says, you know, you guys suck, you know, this is terrible, and you respond back and say, hey, you know, can you specify your problem? We'd love to help. You know, can you give us more details? And the person writes back and says, you guys suck, you know, and isn't willing to engage in the conversation. After those two tries, I think it's absolutely fine to walk away. The only time where I think the rule of two changes a little bit is sometimes you do go back and forth multiple times trying to ascertain the nature of the problem. Mm-hmm. And again, if it's a legitimate complaint, Jay would also agree, you go more than two times, right? You go until you can solve the problem. He's more talking about there somebody who's just really trying to screw with you and cause misery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a question that I have a hunch that you get a lot is, how quickly should a brand respond on social media?
Yeah, I do get that one a lot. And I would say that bar has actually gotten pretty high. Social is a real-time channel. And that is also what makes it different from some other channels. So again, I would first respond with a rhetorical question, which is, how quickly should you respond to the telephone ringing? Right? I mean, the answer is pretty quickly, mm-hmm. right? And you as a consumer, if you've ever been put on hold, you know, 15 minutes is a long time to sit on hold. Now, I would say that the best in class standard in social is 15 minutes or less. I would say that for smaller companies, it is certainly acceptable to be an hour or a couple of hours. Once you start getting into half a day or a day, I think that's more the expectation of like an email channel, whereas I think social people do expect that a little quicker. Now, the one thing to keep in mind is that one of the ways you can navigate your own response time is to be proactive about telling people and setting the expectation of when you're available. Mm-hmm. So if you're an international airline that flies 24/7, you should be available 24/7 on social media. If you're a mom and pop store that has a single location that's open from, you know, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., there's no reason why you need to be available 24 hours on social media. But on your profile, you should tell people when you're available. And during those times, you should be responsive very quickly. And outside of those times, it's totally fine to wait the several hours, you know, until your open time comes back again. So setting expectations is really key. But I would say generally, you know, under an hour. And if you want to be best in class, it's under 15 minutes. And even, I mean, some of the airlines, I've gotten responses from some major airlines in under 5 minutes, which continues to stun me.
Yeah, but you're Dan Genghis.
No, they're not responding just to me in that time. They're responding to most people. And, you know, look, again, that's an industry where if you put yourself in the customer's shoes, a lot of the complaints that people have are, I'm missing my flight, or, you know, my plane is late and I'm going to miss my next flight, or I've lost my bags. I'm standing in the airport. I need help right now. And so they have to be fast, right? But somebody who, you know, wants to make a return to your store or something like that, that's not as urgent of a complaint. And you don't need to answer that in 5 minutes.
Yeah. We are in flight and one of the jet engines is on fire. I don't exactly think the pilot can see it.
Yeah, help now. Right, exactly. Those tend to require a bit of a faster response.
We're going to take a break here so I can tell you more about how Blinkist can help your career. Listening to the Marketing Book Podcast says more about you than you may realize. In addition to being physically attractive, seriously, I've met many of you, and you are a very attractive audience. It also means that you're curious and serious about your business success, and you enjoy learning new things. And your interest in learning also means you're either successful or will be, because all the research indicates that big learners are big earners. Plus, with all the changes happening in marketing and sales, continuous learning is crucial, but there's only so much time and you need to manage it carefully. And unless you're, say, the host of the Marketing Book Podcast, you may not be set up to read a book every week. That's where Blinkist can really be a time saver and a career booster. Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, is a smartphone app that takes the key insights from over 2,000 best-selling nonfiction books and distills them into a format that you can read or listen to in just 15 minutes or less. Instead of having to wade through hundreds of pages of a book, spending hours reading each book like I do every week, you can go through two books in 30 minutes. And the books that are on Blinkist are really top-notch, including several books that have been featured on the Marketing Book Podcast, including The New Rules of Marketing and PR by David Meerman Scott, Perennial Seller by Ryan Holiday, Epic Content Marketing by Joe Polizzi, Everybody Writes by Ann Hanley, Hug Your Haters by Jay Baer, and many, many more. It took me hours to read those books, but you can get smart audio summaries of each one in just 15 minutes. Blinkist has been selected as one of the best apps by Forbes, New York Times, and BuzzFeed, amongst others, and it's used by over 1 million people. Right now, Blinkist has a special offer for Marketing Book Podcast listeners. Go to Blinkist.com/Marketing Book Podcast right now, today, to start your free trial or get 20% off your yearly plan when you join. That's Blinkist, B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/Marketing Book Podcast to start your free trial or get 20% off your yearly plan. I recommend getting the yearly plan. That's what I did, and getting 20% off because you're going to want to keep it anyway. But don't worry, because there's a 30-day money-back guarantee. No questions asked. Go to Blinkist.com/Marketing Book Podcast, and that means you're going to be letting them know that you support the Marketing Book Podcast and that you want that discount. You'll get the free version or 20% off your annual plan. I also have a link to it at MarketingBookPodcast.com. It's a great, inexpensive, and very smart investment in your professional development and career. And now, back to the show. Dan, anytime I see the word Holy Grail in a book, I just have to jump all over it. Can you explain what the Holy Grail of customer service is?
Yeah, so that is towards the end of the book where of the eight steps, the last two are really advanced steps. And I'm going to preface this by saying that not many companies have gotten here yet. But
okay, that was my next question.
Yeah, it's because it's hard. That's why it's the Holy Grail, right? Yeah. The Holy Grail is not accessible by everyone. But we talk about integrating social customer care with first the rest of the business. And those were the examples like, you know, making sure that the feedback about product development is there so that your development team can come up with new products. Or if there is a problem that you're having that, you know, that many customers are having with your website, it's one thing to respond to those customers, but it's quite another to go back to the website team and say, hey, can you guys fix this? Because we're tired of answering this question. That's integrating with your business. But integrating with your CRM system is really the Holy Grail. And the example here, which is actually provided by my old podcast partner, Dan, was that if you are at a Hyatt hotel in Chicago and you request a hypoallergenic pillow, and then 3 months later, you're at a different Hyatt hotel in London, you should have that pillow waiting for you when you arrive without ever having to ask. Right? Because somebody has tagged in your account that you need a hypoallergenic pillow. You shouldn't have to ask for that every single time.
I don't think I'd go to another hotel if that happened to me. If I got the same kind of pillow at the next one, I would say, that's it. I'm not going to look for another hotel after that.
Well, and so Dan said that that was what Hyatt was trying to do, was really take all the information that they were learning from requests from customers in social and building that into their CRM so that they were able to deliver that. And again, this is why I call it the Holy Grail, because not a lot of companies are able to do this. But if you think about why CRM systems were built in the first place, it was so that we have a memory of what a customer asks and the interactions that we've had with them. And so social just has to be connected to that. And I think one of the easy ways to start doing that is you've probably noticed that there's been a shift recently from public channels to private channels. So direct messaging is becoming super, super popular, which is a good thing for both brands and for customers. It's great for brands because of what you said before, is it takes some of the negativity out of the public and brings it into the private space, which they wanted anyway. But it's great for customers because the number one complaint that customers have about customer service is having to repeat themselves. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that again, is having to repeat themselves. And what's nice about direct messaging is it has the entire history right there. Just like when you text somebody, right? And you go to text, you've got the entire history of everything you've ever texted them. It's the same thing with direct messaging. So now you've got companies that don't have to ask you for your loyalty number again. Why? Because you gave it to them the last time you talked to them. Mm-hmm. And that provides then a much smoother experience. And so the Holy Grail is kind of taking that across channel, so that when you show up at the hotel or when you show up at the restaurant or whatever, that information is following you.
Yeah, that's interesting. At the very end of the book, you did talk about messaging apps. And however, I like the messaging apps. In fact, I would rather just get on a messaging, like when I go to a website and just type the information in. It always seems to get resolved quickly. I don't have to repeat myself, as you just said. And they seem to be very responsive. But last week, our printer here in the office was acting up, and I got on the online, and I was clearly not communicating with a human. And I finally, it was almost like being in a voicemail tree, and I said, I need to speak to a representative. And that seemed to jog this AI-fueled bot to get me a human on there. Can you talk about why messaging apps are good, but why this the artificial stuff is potentially problematic?
Well, so I love artificial intelligence. I work now for a startup that focuses on that in marketing, but I very much worry about artificial intelligence when it comes to customer service. I think it has a role. It can make things a lot easier for very basic questions or repetitive questions, mm-hmm. things that are factual that just require, you know, that basically, frankly, people should be Googling and they could get the answer to, right? So an AI is great for that. AI is also really great for helping agents be better customer service providers to customers. So imagine a customer service agent is doing their job, but they're sitting next to IBM Watson and they know everything about the world, you know, all in one little system. that makes them a much smarter, better agent. So imagine if you, you know, the second you tweet at a brand, every, you know, your entire order history shows up on the agent screen, they're going to be able to help you a lot faster. Where AI falls apart in customer service is when companies think that it can replace the humans. And that is just a no-no because it almost always fails. And I had an example, and again, as I said before, I don't like to name brands that are doing it wrong. But I will say that I was asked once in a presentation to show an example of a great chatbot. And I was like, wow, that sounds like an oxymoron, but I'm going to go look for one. And I came upon a chatbot in Facebook Messenger that, let's just say, was held up by Mark Zuckerberg as a great example of a chatbot. And so I was like, okay, if Mark says it's a good one, it probably is. And I started going through, and it was basically it was a pretty simple ordering mechanism. It was like being on the website, you're ordering a product, and it's just sort of taking you step by step and helping you along. Well, when it came to delivering the product, it offered me a series of dates that I could have it delivered. And none of those were the dates that I wanted because I was actually ordering well ahead of time. I wanted the date like 3 weeks out. There was no option. They had only given me three dates and none of the ones were the ones I wanted. So I typed help. And the first question back from the bot was, are you looking for a customer service agent? I said, wow, this is great. Yes, I am looking for a customer service agent. To which the bot responded, customer service is now closed. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. Like, you asked me if I wanted this and then you told me it was closed. But it got better after that. About a second later, a live agent joined the conversation and said, hi, how can I help you? And I said, I thought you were closed. And when I said I thought you were closed, I got a response from both the live agent and the bot at the same time. And so now I'm talking to them both. And I'm like, this is an absolute disaster. And this is one of the message bots that Zuck himself held up and said, this is a great example. So the lesson there is that you have to have an appropriate handoff to a human when it's needed. You shouldn't have to be pounding the zero button like you're on the phone or screaming for an agent. And then that handoff has got to be smooth, and you've got to turn off the bot and go to a human. And so the bots can provide, again, they can handle the simple questions, but as soon as something gets complicated, you really do need to talk to a human. And as we've been talking about in this conversation, a lot of the customer experience these days has to do with the human interaction with a brand because people want to have a relationship. They don't want to have a relationship with a bot.
Mm-hmm. So last question about the book, Dan Gingis, tell us what the future of customer service has to do with pies.
So the point of that comment was that I believe the customer service pie is expanding because of social media. Social media started as a channel of last resort. People came to it when the phone failed them or email failed them or they didn't like the answer they got. But it has quickly emerged as a channel of first resort because people are figuring out that it's a fast, easy-to-use channel that is more enjoyable than the telephone. And so what's happening is more and more people are engaging with brands than ever before. And so brands have to be more available than ever before. And so that's what makes the pie expand. But that's a good thing for brands. Yes, it does add some cost in the sense of having to hire more agents. But if you look at every interaction with a customer as an opportunity to either gain or maintain a customer, you start to see customer service and why we say customer service is the new marketing. You start to see it less as a cost center and more as a revenue generator. Mm. So go back to that example from Discover of the guy that was upset and then he became a customer. Yeah, Discover paid some agent to respond to that, but that ROI was pretty darn good because they got a brand new customer that's been around for several years now, right?
Yeah, let's hope they attribute it back to that customer service rep.
Exactly. She should be getting a royalty. But when you think about it that way, you realize that this isn't just a cost center that needs to be made more efficient, which essentially means cut costs, but that customer service is a way to attract new people to your company and to make sure that they don't attrite to your competitors.
Mm-hmm. So Dan, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
I would say respond to everyone. And as I said before, I want companies to respond to people who are complimenting them. Even a simple thank you is fine, or a hey, we love you too, or even a like or a retweet if you don't have time to respond will go a long way with customers. Obviously, when customers have questions or complaints, they're looking for an answer. So I do advise that you respond to everyone. And if that's the one thing that you take back, I think that what you'll find is your customers will love you for it. You will become a lot more knowledgeable about how your customers are using your product or service, the things they like, the things they don't like. And you'll also be able to hear great ideas that customers have about how to improve your business.
And you'll already, just by responding, you'll be in the top half
yeah, exactly.
of all companies.
Exactly. It's an easy way to get on the leaderboard.
Yeah. So what books have inspired your work and career?
So I think one of them is probably obvious at this point, which is Hug Your Haters by Jay Baer. Mm. And not just because he quoted me in there several times, but because I think he really, what I love about Jay is Jay has pivoted a number of times in his career. Here he's known as this digital marketing expert, and all of a sudden he comes out with a book about customer service. And I thought that was really exciting. And I think he really hit the nail on the head in terms of the reasons why brands need to be engaged in social. And he wrote the foreword to my book. And one of the things that he wrote that I was really appreciative of was that if his book was the why, my book was the how. And because I really get into, I think, more details about setting up processes and all that sort of thing. So mm-hmm. that's a book that I love. I would say two others. I love They Ask You Answer by Marcus Sheridan.
Oh, me too.
And Marcus is a content marketer. So even though that the sound of that book, given this discussion, sounds like it might be about customer service, it's about content marketing. But a lot of the theories are the same, which is listen to what your customers are asking, create content to answer those questions. And then as they're researching your company or as they're researching the product that they're looking for, if they find all the answers from your website, they're going to be a lot more prone to buy from you. So I love Marcus. He's also a great guy and the single greatest speaker I've ever heard. So if you have a chance ever to hear him on stage, he's amazing.
Absolutely. Let me just interject. There were several parts of your book where you were talking about these known irritants and inquiries from people. And it's like I wanted to point at that those sections of the book and say, marketers, if you're not extracting content that you could be producing from your customer service reps, you're making it much more difficult. But yeah, I agree that
absolutely. And his book came out after mine. Otherwise, I absolutely would have referred to it there. But that one is one that I love. And then the last one I would point out would be Brian Solis's book, X the Experience. Either that one or the one before that, which is What's the Future of Business? I think he is one of the most cerebral, intelligent, innovative people around customer experience. And just the way that he thinks is mesmerizing to me. And his books are intentionally designed as an experience. Mm. So X the Experience is like a beautiful coffee table book that you don't just read. You sort of like, I don't know, you inhale it. It's really, really a great book. And it is so thought provoking. So I love Brian Solis. He's also a great speaker. And everything he writes, I listen to.
Amen. And you know what, Dan, after 170 something interviews, this is the first time that a guest has said the books that have inspired them and they've liked all of them I've interviewed on the Marketing Book Podcast.
All right, good. So, I was hoping to go 3 for 3 there.
Yes. So, well, now you've just made it more difficult for everyone else, but I'm going to include a link to all three of those interviews on the show notes, your show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com, and I couldn't agree more. Wow. So are there any recent or upcoming books that you recommend or are looking forward to reading?
Yeah, I have three there as well. I, of course, am very excited about my current podcast partner on the Experience This show, Joey Coleman, who just released a book called Never Lose a Customer Again. Joey is also an amazing speaker, and his concept of the first 100 days being absolutely critical to keeping customers and keeping them happy for a long time. It's really, really intelligent, and he has fantastic examples from brands. So that is a must-read book. I think that's going to become the Bible, the new Bible of customer experience. Mm-hmm. So that one I would recommend. Another buddy of mine in the customer service area is Shep Hyken. You've probably had him on as well.
I have not.
You definitely should have Shep on. Oh. Another handsome bald guy, first of all. So, we hang together in packs. But his new book is called Be Amazing or Go Home. And Shep is, I like to call, first of all, Shep's like my brother from another mother, because when we hang out, it's somewhat humorous. Two customer service guys who have the same hairdo. But what I like to say about Shep is if I'm a social media guy that got into customer service, Shep is a customer service guy that got into social media. And he's been doing the customer service thing for years, and a very inspirational speaker. He's also a magician, so he has a very, his presentations are always fun. But that one I recommend. And then I thought I would throw one out that has nothing to do with the podcast. Got a recommendation from a friend before seeing the movie to read Ready Player One. And I just read it and thought that was really, really a fun book. And I'm not much of a computer or video game geek, but I thought it was a terrific book. And so I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about that movie. That's terrific. Well, great. So how best can listeners learn more about you and your book?
Well, I would say two ways. The first is I have a website called winningatsocial.com. And not surprisingly, given what my book is about, I'm very active on Twitter and I do respond. My response time is very good, although I do work full time. So sometimes my hours are a little bit different, but I'm at DGingiss, which is DGINGISS. And I love to connect and talk with people on Twitter. And also you can hit me up on LinkedIn, where I also love to connect, especially professionally, and meet others who are interested in the same things.
Well, terrific. On your show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com, I'm going to include those links to your Twitter account. I'm also going to include a link to experiencethisshow.com, which is the podcast, the site for the podcast you do with Joey. We'll include a link to Winning It Social. We'll include a link to your LinkedIn profile and to the listener. If you are listening on your smartphone and you have subscribed to this show on your podcast player of choice, like iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play Music, all of these links can be found by going to this episode on your podcast player and clicking on the show notes link. So not while you're driving, but once you're stopped, you can tweet and connect with Dan on LinkedIn. So the name of the book is Winning at Social Customer Care, How Top Brands Create Engaging Experiences on Social Media. The author is Dan Gingiss. Dan, thank you very much for being on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It was a fun discussion, and thanks for having me.
And that closes the book on episode 176 of the Marketing Book Podcast. For more, check out this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or other helpful resource, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat and I'll try to point you in the right direction. My name again is Douglas Burdett. Special thanks to our sponsor, Blinkist. To support the Marketing Book Podcast and start your free Blinkist trial or get 20% off your yearly plan, visit Blinkist.com/marketingbookpodcast. I also have a link to that special offer at marketingbookpodcast.com. And please join us next time as we welcome Tanya Hall to the Marketing Book Podcast to talk about her new book, Ideas, Influence, and Income. Write a book, build your brand, and lead your industry. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.